Blog Talk Radio.
The Visionary Hotspot. Talk radio with the consciousness of women, for women, by women. A radio show bridging the gap among women desiring their purpose with the world's greatest minds, achievers, and believers of women's progress. The Visionary Hotspot. Inspiring, encouraging, enlightening, and empowering women to live life as our greatest self. I am you, you are me, and we are visionary women.
Hello, hello, and welcome everyone to the Visionary Hotspot Talk Radio. And today I am here with, when I say, an advocate for children and bettering our school systems and making sure we are on point with how we're treating each other within the school realm, Erin Broder. How are you, my dear?
I am so well. That intro just made me feel like I am jogging across the finish line. Like, it just is so inspiring. I love it. I'm so happy to be here.
Listen, I'm loving the fact that you are here with us today because we, everyone, are tackling this question head on. The public school system, is it truly serving the future of America? So tell me, Erin, why is this conversation so near and dear to you?
Well, my background is in education. I taught in East Harlem, and I had a phenomenal experience as an educator, which is not the norm necessarily these days. And that's kind of why I bring a unique perspective, because I've been in a place that I'd experienced really the lowest of the lows, just in people not working together, and the school having a history of low performance. And I was so supported. When I came on to the team, the right supports were in place, and those might be, or those were, coaches. We had mentors from the district. We had consultants. We had so much support for our new staff members and really onboarding them in a way that was supportive of a positive school climate, that supported the skills that we brought, and then it helped us hone in and sharpen those skills to really support students where they were at. And we had really high-functioning teams amongst myself and my colleagues. And it was all these things I took for granted, right? I mean, I thought everyone had it, you know, this good, where people got along, people supported each other. I never felt that I was by myself, that I was a one-man island. And that type of cohesion is so important for resilience, right? Because in a school setting, depending where your school is, regardless of where it is, because trauma and adversity is everywhere, rural, suburban, urban.
Yes.
But the bonds between the relationships between adults and with students and the community is so key to being resilient to some of the adversity that is constantly experienced in those settings.
You know what's really interesting too, Erin, is because a lot of times we already know what the issues are, okay? It has been spoken about time and time again. We already know overcrowded schools, classes, this huge backlash on resources, the lack of resources, not enough here, not there. But my focus, and the reason why I invited you on my show, was to really hone in on how to make it better, because we can choose all day, all night, to talk about the issues, and that's important too. Let's not make it seem like we're in candy land, because that's not the reality. Some of these kids are really having a challenging time, and let's keep it honest, some of these teachers are having a challenging time with some of these children. So we understand those aspects. But my question is, how do we help to fix it? Because, okay, yes, now we realize, I saw this yesterday, with these new tax cuts, these new corporational tax cuts that actually help to go towards our children, the roads, the police officers, et cetera, that's a whole other conversation, but it also affects the educational system.
Well, and we see where money is taken out of.
Yes. We see that it's going to affect the educational system. How do we now reinvent our school systems with what resources we have?
Yeah. So there's many angles to take apart that question. And the first I want to acknowledge, there's no one solution, right? This is a complex problem. It has been compounded for, you know, decades to where schools are solving the problem for America's poverty. And it's important, you know, because I also have one foot in the research world, it's important to acknowledge that when we start making claims about how poverty affects the brain, which it does, that we can't focus on the, you know, the blame and not look at, you know, who might be benefiting from this and what might need to be done outside of the actual problem, right? So when we think of, you know, we look at the schools and we're like, okay, the teachers and the students and the people that are present mm-hmm. in that place, but how are we working strategically on a district level or on a city level
right.
or on a state level to really be more, you know, not just hands-on, because, you know, that may or may not be the right response either, but to be more diligent. And by having my
right.
foot in the research world, what I see is the gap is immense, right? There are things that we know from research that takes years to get into a classroom. And
wow.
that's the work that I do. But it is a huge setback for people
mm-hmm.
who are on the ground. We know, you know, we're still operating on antiquated systems of what public schools are. It has evolved since
wow.
then, yet the school systems haven't. And I mean, and I'm speaking in general, right? I've worked with
uh-huh.
schools also that have very innovative approaches that are actually based on action research, so research in action.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of the schools that are comprehensive and are struggling are still built on these old ideas of how to make things function and on these old ideas of how brains develop. And what we know is that brains don't stop developing at, you know, 14 or 15. They start,
right.
adolescent brains go until they're 24.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like
yeah.
there's a lot of learning curves in there. And do people in the class, you know, are we educating people on brain development? I mean, we're learning more as a, you know, as a human race, as, you know, through research
mm-hmm.
and science. And so getting that learning in front of people is the first thing to do. And the truth is, when we want happy, thriving students, we have to have happy, thriving adults. And it doesn't just mean educators, right?
Mm-hmm.
It means parents. It means any adults
yes.
that are interacting with students. And for educators on my end, I work with teacher leaders. I build people's leadership capacity. And I partner with leaders at school sites to do this work, to really initiate a school-wide transformation and culture shift and how people are working
uh-huh.
together and placing teachers in a place where they're decision makers, right? Because that's the other
uh-huh.
part. Teachers are being held accountable for other people's decisions, and there are responsibilities. I'm not removing those, but every person, every human being thrives off of autonomy. You know, when we think
right.
about motivation, they want to know what they're good at. They want to feel that they're strong and that they know their strengths. Those are the things
mm-hmm.
that make us happy. And when they're taken away and then we're compounded with all the ways that neglect, you know, hits our schools, so that if we don't have the resources, if we don't have the strategies and the skill set to work with some of these complex behaviors, then the fingers start flying, right?
Right.
It's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault, and it's not a
right.
collaborative approach. And it's
exactly.
it's almost counterintuitive, right? Like, we know people have to work together, yet, you know, if we don't provide those structures inside of schools and in school systems and really prioritize things like collaboration and leadership, I mean, teachers are leader. Every human being is a leader, you know, and
mm-hmm.
if people are just left to, you know, and this is, you know, something that I despise about barcodes and, oh, you just do that.
Right.
And, you know, here's this letter, you know, teachers are human beings. And a lot of times they're not treated like that. And especially in places that have, you know, are at-risk schools, that are struggling with low performance, that deal with other community factors that just impact the performance of the school.
Right. And, you know, I'm wondering to myself, as you were speaking, I was sitting here thinking to myself, is it also fair to say
because I've had this conversation with other fabulous women within the realms of education, that we're not really teaching our students real critical thinking like we used to. You know, this whole technology boom has taken over the capabilities of the prefrontal cortex to even be able to have critical thinking. So what happens to the prospects of maybe realizing what we did in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s, when critical thinking was a real skill because you needed it to survive? If you didn't have it, you didn't survive. I mean, these were the things that people depended upon. You know, when I think in terms of when I was in school, I learned a lot of things that I will never use in my everyday existence. And so literally thinking in terms of what you can cut that you know people don't need, and then adding those things that you know people will need to survive on the planet. Because I'm telling you, the last time I used calculus was when I sent my taxes to my CP, and I said, listen, honey, I need you to help me out with this. I didn't use it. She did. So that's what I'm saying. You know, I feel as though sometimes we're teaching children and requiring teachers to teach children things that don't apply to their lives, and then we're expecting them to excel and never use those skills ever again. So then now education is completely waste. They don't see value in it. How do we start to bring value in the sight of these children and to the educators who teach them?
Yeah, so there's a couple of responses I have. The first one is kind of this part that is, it's not completely out of our hands, but it's not in our locus of control, and that is the accountability piece, right? That's something that has been handed down. People have different political agendas and motives, and that has really thrown education a curveball, right? Like the testing, the mandated testing. I've worked with schools that are testing every month. And these are critical tests because, you know, people's salaries are based on these tests. People's promotion, you know, whether the students are promoting grades are based on these tests. I mean, there's so many factors. And so then we shift our priorities. I'll tell you, when we have, when we prioritize creativity and innovation and people putting things together with their hands, when people are, or when our students are really engaged in their learning experience, that's when you start to get some of that, of what you're getting at, of what we need moving forward to have successful people to continue, you know, being a stakeholder in the way the world evolves, right, as Americans. You know, not another day, but last year I remember driving home and seeing a kid. He was carrying groceries for his house, and he had two heavy bags, and he sat them down on the sidewalk, and he tied them together and put them over his shoulder. And
Come on, now, oh my God. Now, see,
right?
This is what I'm saying. I need to meet that little boy so we could patent it and put it out on the That's what I'm saying.
He had a problem.
That's a brilliant way to solve it. It's not like the boy put it on his head. It was a brilliant way to solve it. And even if he had put it around his shoulders, he was smart. He used and saw that there was a problem, and he was capable of saying, okay, this right here is not working. I'm trying to get home now. Let me tie these bags together so I can get home right now. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That is the kind of innovation that I'm talking about. And it requires us to really push the narrative to say, come on, guys. How can we teach these children to use critical thinking skills? What do we need to tell our and encourage our teachers to where they can use those skills with these children? And then, better yet, because I think sometimes we forget principals are people too, okay?
Yes.
And they go home with these issues also.
How about allowing
the principals to say, you know what, giving them the freedom to tell these teachers, you know what, be as creative as you possibly can. Let's take what little bit we have and then show the world that we can change the game just with the innovation we're capable of giving.
Exactly. And, you know, the kind of unfortunate part about that is with all these mandates and all this accountability, it makes it really challenging to do that. And
wow.
For people who are in states that have value-added measures, which are, you know, if your students score this much, you know, this is, you get a salary raise or you get a bump or you get to keep your job, right?
Wow.
All these, you know, daily fears of just, you know, the world being pitted against you, what does that happen? It burns our teachers out. I mean, burnout is so huge in this work.
Wow.
And it's also challenging, too, because, and I teach this, I do workshops on self-care. Empathy is such a critical part of our work, right? For educators,
wow.
Just like nurses and doctors and EMTs, we are helping professionals. We are on the front line. And a lot of times, you know, students will wait to school to tell us what happened last night or tell us what happened the day before. So not only are we kind of cognitively there and stressed because we have all these things to do, we have these emotional and these other kind of mental, and I don't want to say burdens, but just things that can weigh us down. And without the strategies,
mm-hmm.
without the support, we can't make a difference. And that is, honestly, when people want to change a school site, obviously you need everyone on the same page. You need to have a
yes.
vision of that school that reflects all the stakeholders. And even, you know, one of the things that my most recent speaking engagement, I talked about children adversity. It's called, there's a tool called ACEs, Adverse Childhood
mm-hmm.
Experiences. It's a survey that measures the impact of trauma over someone's
wow.
lifetime and what the expected health outcomes are if you don't mitigate all the stress and anxiety that are set off by these traumatic experiences. And the biggest thing is the same thing I opened up here with is if you want to support the child and their resilience, you have to support the adult. And so as educators, how are we working with the parents? How are we working with the caregivers to also provide that support? Because when we're all supporting each other, I mean, and my experience first starting out, I started in elementary school. I went to middle and then I started working at high schools. But in the elementary space, when we were such a tight team, we had so much fun with our kids. You know, we did thematic
wow.
units. We went to China. The kids thought we were actually going to China. We did passports. I mean, it was like the joy that can come in because all of these critical pieces were taken care of. Or I can now deal with this child, you know, having a behavior issue or, you know, acting out in a certain way because I have all my lessons are taken care of. The other students know what to do, you know, while I'm, you know, calming this other student down. Whereas when all those things are happening simultaneously and it's like kindergarten cop and you don't have the
wow.
tools, you're ready to lose your mind. And that is actually even more dangerous than the lower test scores or even losing your job because, you know, when we become callous and numb, and this is specifically speaking in the frame of the trauma or just letting the
right.
stress and the burnout build on us, we don't know if we're helping or harming. And that's for every
right.
human being, right? And, you
right.
know, as our work as educators, we, you know, we're here to help. We're here to support students grow and develop in healthy ways that will help them do the best for themselves, which is another,
wow.
you know, I can go and go,
wow.
but working with students, it's not about solving their problems. It's like, how do I help them solve their own problems?
Which makes so much sense. How do I help them solve their own problems? Everyone, we are going to come back to answer that very question on the other side of this commercial break.
Join us at thevisionarywoman.com, a media network of women, for women, by women. Watch our hosts of insightful video exchange interviews. Listen to the Visionary Hotspot Talk Radio to empower your evenings and read fascinating articles of perseverance and inspiration, all with you in mind. Visit thevisionarywoman.com and follow us on our social media pages, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Yes, everyone, thank you for joining me
at that amazing commercial break, and we are here with Aaron Browder, and we're talking about the public school system. Is it truly serving the future of America? And Aaron, you spoke about a few moments ago about teaching children how to solve their own problems. It kind of reminded me of that thought process. If I take you fishing and I fish for you, you will always need me. You will always depend upon me to earn your food, to gain your dinner. But if I teach you to fish, you'll never go hungry. How do we start implementing that very practice in our educational system?
Yeah, you know, I do want to surface or preface this with the fact that a lot of the work I get to do in schools, I'm so privileged that I get to come in and partner with schools and do this work alongside teachers and alongside principals and administrative teams. And it gives me flexibility, right? It gives me some creativity, and it gives me the opportunity to bring, you know, the research to life. And what we know about emotional climate and emotional awareness is that when students and people, human beings in general, speak from a place of their feelings, they are more, A, engaged, they're more present and mindful, and they're bringing, well, for students, it plays a twofold thing. One is a lot of our students are unable to communicate how they feel, right? That's where behavior comes in. It's the behavior as a means of communicating because they may not have the tools to tell you how they feel in that moment. So the more that we talk about our feelings, then the more we can release them. Daniel Goleman, my goodness, I hope I'm saying the right, not Daniel Goleman, excuse me, Daniel Siegel, he talks about you have to name it to tame it. So when you name the emotion that you're feeling, then you can actually do something about it.
Wow.
But when we think about kind of the authoritative structures that even we were brought up in, where people told you how to feel, how you feel, that never felt right. Right? You're angry, but I'm not angry. I'm just sad, or I'm frustrated, or I'm disappointed.
Right.
All those variations. So one way of helping people or helping our students solve their own problems is, you know, I talk to groups about emotional awareness. And using something we call fist to five, which is a fist is zero and a five is just your five fingers out, that looks like a hand, and sharing how you feel right now, right? And this is elementary, but it can be adapted to secondary settings. So how do you feel right
now?
Some people are like, I feel zero. Well, I don't like zero. We want to do one, right? Because we don't want to do zero. Our hearts are beating. We're here. So, you know, if someone feels a two, then they can share how they feel, and then the teacher asks them, and once there's a flow in the class, other students can ask, what can you do to help yourself feel better, right? So that's already kind of embedding them with this sense of, you know, their own agency and advocacy that I'm feeling like a two, right, like really low energy. Maybe someone said something that hurt my feelings. And so I can go talk to my other friend who always makes me feel good, right? Because we know, I mean, and this is kind of like in the depth of that work, but we talk about protective factors. You know, all the time it's like, you're at risk for diabetes. You're at risk for, you know, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, blah, blah, blah. Well, what protects you? Relationships protect you, expectations, right? Everyone wants to feel like they're doing a good job. And this goes, that's why I focus on adults, because when we can constantly, you know, support and provide encouragement and meaningful feedback, right? There's always room to advance. Then people feel gracious, they feel appreciated, and they're willing to do more. You know, all my girlfriends and I, when I first started teaching, were there before school started and after, and many teachers are. And a lot of them aren't appreciated, right? And they're not feeling the benefit of that when they're dealing with all the different stressors at the same time. And also, what is the benefit of, you know, necessarily working with someone like me is that I'm outside of the issues, right? A lot of times people are trying to solve the problem with the same thinking that is that is causing the problem to persist, right? Albert Einstein.
Right. And then I think a lot of times too, as women, and we are the beating hearts of a lot of our families, because now, as you well know, over 80% of the American households are being ran by a single mother or a woman by herself with her children. So when we think in terms, or whom she is mothering, so when we think in terms of families, we need to really talk to the beating hearts of these families, because the truth of the matter is, we, as teachers, there's only so much you can do. Let's just keep it real.
Yes.
Because you got to eventually go home. That child,
and you have your own family
you next year, and you have your own set of children, your own family to tend to. So how do we start also encouraging parents to take on the responsibilities of their children, along with being there to be a supportive backing for those parents who are really struggling? Now, we only have 4 minutes left in the show to answer that, and I know it's kind of loaded, but still, if we could kind of condense that down to condensed milk a little bit, that would be great, because those are real responses people want to know the answers to.
Yeah, well, you know, it's similar to even the example of owning your feelings and speaking from that place, even at home, right? And these aren't things of take another program and spend hours learning.
Right.
These are tweaks to the ways that you're engaging every day. And when your child sees that you're partnering with the other adults in their lives, please believe things change. And, you know, there are students who have internalized trauma and are on a different level, right? They need specialized support. But then there's a lot, there's many more that are in the middle. There are many more who are just members of our general, you know, populations and groups that start to veer in a more danger zone, but we can net them when we start to embrace, you know, who they are, their own individuality. How are we, talking to them? How are we in classrooms, increasing opportunities so that they can engage together? How are we talking to our students at home? How are we talking to them, you know, over dinner, or showing them our own resilience when we try to solve a problem and we don't like lose it right away, that we get frustrated with ourselves and they see, you know, that we have a growth mindset. You know, those are those early experiences. And really, I mean, early childhood, what we know is that it totally makes a difference in a child's cognitive, their mental, their emotional abilities. When as babies, right, we are reading them books and we're showing them love and we're smiling and we're touching them. You know, these, I mean, again, small tweaks, right? You're there with them anyway. And it's what's the quality of the time that you're spending with your child?
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Erin, listen, I already know. Everybody going to want to work with you. They already working with you, but they need to work with you some more so we can change the paradigm of the future of America, okay, through our public school systems. How do we reach you when we need you to come in and help clean up the mess that's been
Thank you. So I am at, my name is Erin, E-R-I-N, Avery, A as in apple, B as in Victor, E-R, Y as in yak. Browder, B as in boy, R-O-W-D-E-R, D as in doctor, .com, erinaverybrowder.com. And there you can contact me. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at the handle Erin the Educator. And so I often tweet when I'm, you know, at speaking engagements or I'm hearing, like, really great pieces of information that I want to get out to my community. And I do a lot of work around, you know, social-emotional learning and trauma, as well as building leaders. So those are just topics I'm so impassioned about.
Oh, my goodness. Everyone, I am so glad you joined us today. Remember, every last one of us has a part to play in the way we shape America through the eyes of our children. Remember, you can always reach me, Charmaine Caraway, at thevisionarywoman.com. Join all of our social media handles. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on Instagram. Listen, we are on the moon, and we done found some new stuff, too. We are everywhere, everyone, absolutely everywhere. Oh, and don't forget to watch our new films with our new partners, Women's Voices Now, They are on Netflix, and they are now a part of the VisionaryWoman.com family, everyone. We have our own set of, yes, of short films. So we are touching everything from articles to radio to absolutely everything that you can possibly think of film, and we're now going into internet television. We will see you next Thursday at 5 p.m. Later.